And now the end is near, and so we face the final recording.
Oh, thank God.
I know, right?
Well, at least not necessarily the final recording, but the final day of South by Southwest.
It's the final countdown. Karaoke Apocalypse is playing. I don't think they know that song, unfortunately.
No, I'm sure they know it.
They just don't, yeah.
They just are better than to play it.
Hey, that's probably true. Well, we are here. This is Brian, of course, and you heard Chris.
Hello, I'm Chris.
Chris over there. And then, of course, Ashley Moreno has joined us.
Hello. I am glad to hear that you guys were talking about the end of South By. I'm standing in this dark alley with the two of you talking about the end. I started to get a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah, this will be Ashley's last recording.
Did you not know about the One of Us suicide pact? I feel like I should have told you about that.
No. Yeah, because you guys would have actually had to poison my drink because I could outrun either one of you, I'm pretty
That's
sure.
really true.
It's just that I'm working for mobsters in Vegas and...
All right.
You knew we'd catch up with you, Ashley.
Yeah, mobsters. You or my gambling debts.
Well, you know, it's that. I make money where I can.
Yeah.
And it's Uber, mobsters, and
Please
Vegas.
Become a subscriber to oneofus.net so Chris doesn't have to murder people.
Seriously.
Or if you need somebody murdered.
Yes, if you need someone murdered, oneofus.net, subheading murder.
Because evidently we're already halfway there.
Yeah, why not?
I see it now. Your Honor, I think that's all the evidence we need to successfully prove that Mr. Cox was responsible for the series of
murders. Told me a long time ago things said on podcasts are inadmissible, so I've just been confessing to every fucking thing.
Well, at the very...
believed me.
Uh-oh.
Well, he's a gullible guy. And I mean, at the very least, as long as you guys put it behind the subscriber's content, they at least paid you to get the evidence.
There you go. That's how the legal system works.
It's true.
Hey,
I'm gonna start.
Hey, speaking of money, this podcast is brought to you by Audible. And if you would like a free audiobook, please click on our link at the bottom of the page and go to audible.com and get yourself a free audiobook. Audible.com.
And don't just type in audible.com because that does nothing for us.
That does nothing for us.
Click on the link and go there.
I would give you the URL, but I fucking forgot what it is.
So, you know, go to the page.
Just click on it.
It's you may have heard of us. It's oneofus.net.
Yeah.
You'll see the audible.com thing on there.
I think it's a pretty easy name to remember,
and
all things
frankly,
being equal.
There's an amazing amount of stuff on there, not just audiobooks, but audio dramas and all sorts of stuff.
Well, actually, and this isn't even, I'm not holding a script. This is just actually my life. I'm looking for a cool audiobook that I literally got off of audible.com for my last road trip. The Assassins trilogy by Robin Cobb kicks serious ass, and I loved it. And there's a pretty cool recording on it that we did by Audible.
Nice.
Yeah,
there you go.
I haven't listened to that, so I'm now I'm going to go on there and
pick it up. I'm pulling a Jay-Z. The money that I spent literally went back into our own pockets.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about the movies, the last batch of movies, the last batch of South by Southwest movies that we have seen. Starting with, I can't believe we haven't talked about Ex Machina yet.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it.
Did you get to
see Ex Machina?
I did not. I was in something else at the
time. Do you feel bad?
Yes and no. I really wanted to see it, but it'll get released. So whenever I come to film,
it'll definitely get released.
Are you looking at me like that?
You should feel a little bad.
Okay. Well, the way I kind of do it is I try to catch movies that I might not otherwise get to see.
I could have brought Ashley down here just to make her feel bad about things she didn't see. Good job.
Well, I thought that's why you picked the alley. I made some bad decisions in life. So
you're hanging out with us. You definitely did.
But Ex Machina is Oscar Isaacs is basically the guy who invented the Tesla car. You know, the crazy inventor guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he was literally based on that guy.
Yeah, whose name I can never remember.
Yeah, I never can remember his name.
I was going to say Warren Buffett, but I know that's not
him. No, that is not
You're
him.
Thinking of Warren Beatty.
Warren Beatty, yes. Dick Tracy invented the Tesla car.
Yeah. Something about...
So he can finally defeat Big Boy Caprice.
I wanted to make some joke about Margaritaville, but I couldn't quite get there.
You know what? Come Monday, you'll think of a good joke for that.
I ruined it with my sweet Warren Beatty comment.
You did.
Yeah, totally worth it. I regret nothing.
This is the directorial debut of Alex Garland, who previously wrote films like Sunshine, 28 Days Later, and Dread.
Okay, I'm that weird guy who like called Sunshine my favorite movie of the year
Sunshine's great! Why do people hate on Sunshine so much?
I don't understand it at all. I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
You're wrong, people.
This is a more finessed, smarter film than Sunshine is.
This is a movie where Domhnall Gleeson, who's in a movie with Oscar Isaac, which was funny to have them on stage and be like, oh, it's Apocalypse and one of the cast members of Star Wars Episode 7. In 6 months, these will be two of the biggest stars on the planet.
Yeah.
And they're standing there, and this movie is about, you know, an employee Oscar Isaac, as we said, plays this very eccentric billionaire, this tech mogul who has a contest within his company. Domhnall Gleeson wins and is flown out to his very palatial but very secluded estate in the mountains. He gets there by helicopter and no other way, and is basically there to administer the Turing test.
Now, if you don't know what the Turing test is, that is the test you give to a computer
to see if it's gay. To see if it's Benedict Cumberbatch.
No.
See if it'll win an Oscar. No,
the second one's right, to see if it's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
To see if it's super intelligent.
You just feed pictures of otters into it and see how it responds.
No, to see if it has true artificial intelligence.
Right,
into this, like, this labyrinth built by Apple.
Yes.
Near as I can tell.
The iMaze.
Yeah, exactly. To interact with this thing that is, what was her name? Alice Vikander?
Vikander! Because it was a very Viking-sounding name.
Vikander. Sounds like a Venture Brothers character.
Go, Team Vikander!
Where she's got, like, their, you know, total human face, hands, and feet, but the rest is very clearly a robot.
Yeah.
Even though it's a sexy robot, and I would totally have sex with
it. So it basically, you start to get to a place where you suspect things about Oscar Isaac's character, you're wondering what the relationship is between Domhnall and this robot, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I don't want to get into the minutiae of the plot, because what's so much more important about this movie is the conversations that were coming out of the screening. Just really interesting. I mean, the way good sci-fi is supposed to work, because it really gets you thinking about the nature of existence and the nature of technology. And the question that I kind of came away with is that even though Oscar Isaac is painted as the antagonist to the movie, I'm not sure he did anything wrong.
Well, that's the interesting discussion, because in the context of, advanced computing today, you can't talk to anybody who won't tell you in that field, yeah, the singularity is coming.
I mean,
make no mistake, that's not science fiction. AI is, like, we don't know how far away. It may have even already happened, and we just don't know it, but it's coming, one way or the other. We don't know if it's going to be Skynet or it's going to be a sexy, Vikander robot.
Yes.
But it might be both. But the point this movie really kind of tries to hammer home to some point is, there are children, and maybe our time is up.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to run this world better than we do.
Yep. And if Terminator is to believe, then yeah, pretty much.
And that question, though, in the movie, because it's not firmly, that's the opinion of the film, it's like, well, what do you think about that?
Like, me personally?
Yeah, would you date a robot, Ashley?
Would you, if it was going to be like, you
does
know...
Does it look like Benicio Del Toro?
It can look like anybody you want it to look like, because it's a robot.
Well, yeah, because, like, I don't like to pick somebody who just, like, is generically attractive. You know what I mean?
Oh, generically attractive, Benicio Del Toro. That's interesting.
No, give me the Kiko's, motherfucker.
Give me the fucking input, you fucking cocksucker. What the fuck?
That got a little bit Paul Giamatti.
It did.
I think you only do one voice, and you're just like, you declare it to be a different character.
No, you can do Christopher Walken, I've heard it.
Well, does like Paul Giamatti?
Yes, it does.
If they're all in a movie differently?
If they're all in a movie together with Morgan Freeman and the Steve from Sex and the City, then we're going to have a big old time on this website, because that's pretty much my catalog right
there. This movie is like, it's very... it's emotional yet cold. It's thick with data, and yet at the same time overrun with emotion.
Are you writing techno haikus about this movie?
Is that
what you're doing?
It's intentionally contradictory, as it's questioning, like, so what, is it so bad if AI replaces us?
Robot cherry popping.
And
relationship downloaded.
There's a lot of questions to be asked.
I have robo herpes.
There's a lot of great performances in this film, no question. Domhnall Gleeson really, if you had any question about his acting capacity at this point, you know, like, oh, that's just Ron Weasley's brother. No, he's really good.
And it's a beautiful movie, and it's shot so well, and I think see it when it comes out. See it when it comes out.
Agreed. One of my favorites of the festival.
So you guys got to see a movie, speaking of favorites, you two got to see a movie last night called Turbo Kids that, as soon as I heard what it was actually about, I was punching myself in the testicles
for
missing this.
5 minutes into this, I think I turned to Ashley and was like, oh, Brian's going to sort of be punching himself in the testicles.
Yeah, I actually heard the echo, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
pain coming from the distance.
Testicles? I think I've heard that before. It does come up in Austin every now and then.
It does.
It's a distinct sound that your testicles make.
This is the film that Golan Globus Productions, if they decided to make a sequel to BMX Bandits back in the 80s, and being Golan Globus Productions and coming up with absolutely ridiculous ideas, you could see somebody going, okay, sequel to BMX Bandits took place in the 80s, but what if we made it take place after the apocalypse.
I love that this movie sounds like the Cyborg to BMX Bandits Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
It's not really a far cry, to be honest.
Oh, what did I not
say that? You kind of missed it. Fuck. Quick summary. Monroe Chambers plays the kid, and he's basically a comic book obsessed BMXer whose parents are murdered by none other than Zeus, played by Michael Ironside.
Michael Ironside is in this?
Yeah, who apparently has eaten all the other character actors. Because he got in the space between this and his last film, that boy got big.
Well, his actual name is Ironside. Yeah. That's like his real
name.
His
actual name.
So he's built like a battleship is what she's trying to say.
At this point, although...
Well, like one of those battleships, it takes like 5 pegs to sink. He's a big motherfucker.
Although I hear his wife likes to say he goes down like the Lusitania.
I'll be in my Honda Civic if you need me.
You go over there and think about what you just said.
Sorry.
Fortunately for the kid, although he has probably lost his parents, he's been alone for a while, he runs into Apple, who is played by Lawrence Lubba.
Who's adorable!
She is delightful!
She's you. She is so... I was like, she's you, isn't she?
I'm very excitable. I try to stay positive. But yeah, if I hit a treadmill and got a cool helmet, maybe.
Yeah, she is a like super happy, like whatever. Sure, it's the apocalypse. You're my best friend, and I love you. Yeah. Who comes out of
Wait,
nowhere?
She's the dog from Up.
Yeah. Kind of.
Basically. Wow. Okay. Fair enough.
Like, except
fair
enough. Sexy.
Yeah. Wait, you didn't think that?
This
you know
is
what?
Like
never
two
mind.
Robots
never mind.
In a row, we would have sex with.
It is. Yeah.
We are 2 for 2 on the robot sex movies.
You're doing it to robots in the USB port.
So the two of them decide to. It has a somewhat Tank Girl esque storyline where an asshole has control of all the water and they're going to try to take it back, but with BMX bikes.
Yes,
that's awesome.
Well, the way that everyone, it's not just they have BMX bikes. I mean, everyone. Like this is like. That with the Road Warrior villains crossed into it, who were like, you see this guy looks like a Road Warrior villain riding a little BMX bike.
Well, I think the best part about it, too, is that it actually comes across as like, well, guys, it's the apocalypse. There's not gas anymore. Yeah. So the most badass of people are on, like, you know, their rollerblades. They're like, this is the best we could find, dude. We had to go low-tech with this. This is the apocalypse.
It's
real good.
This kid is, like you said, his parents were killed. He's been all on his own. He's just, like, gotten by fantasizing about these comic books he's found about this guy. He's actually called Turbo.
I believe the name is Turbo Kid.
No. He's Turbo Kid.
Oh, Turbo Man.
Turbo Rider.
He was a Turbo Man, though.
But
jingle all the way, jokes.
There's this point where like the inexplicable.
It wasn't wasted on me, Salisbury.
This is inexplicable. Only can happen in an 80s crappy movie moment where he stumbles across a crashed like ship from like. You know, the time before that the actual Turbo Rider apparently was the pilot of, so all his shit is in there. So he puts on his outfit, including a Nintendo Power Glove that can shoot like badass explosive laser blast. Brian right now is on the ground holding himself, rocking back and forth.
Why?
That he missed this film.
Why did I miss this?
And as they try to basically deal with this guy and just live their lives, and it's so funny and precious.
It was made with so much love.
It was.
And I have to say, as much as it's like full of nostalgia, it is a good story. It stands on its own, I thought.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I thought it was super enjoyable.
I did too. I mean, they make no question. It's a love letter, a nostalgia like a message to these 80s Golden Globus type films.
But it maybe outdoes.
But it totally outdoes those films. It's like, hey, you know how much fun we had those films? We all admit they weren't really great, but at the same time, I we got so much love out of it, maybe we should just like try and do it better. And that being said, it does something that those films don't necessarily do, which is that it has some pretty splatterific gore in it.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And there's gore.
I mean, there's a sequence where...
Come on.
Like, this guy keeps having parts of other people land on his head and he can't see. At one point, he's like a totem pole of three guys' parts of their body that have been blown off.
Which
Brian is actually.
I am, yeah. That's how I am walking around. I'm only ambulatory because of other people's parts.
I gotta say, I really enjoyed the shit out of this. I was a little cynical at first. Because it's like, oh, here we go, another nostalgia letter.
Shut up, you! A little cynical at first.
At first. But by the end of it, I was in love with it because it had a heart.
It did.
Yeah.
It really did. Yeah.
What else did you see, Ashley? What have we not talked about with you
yet? So, let's see. Did we talk about the Kurt Cobain documentary?
No.
Montage, you should talk about the heck? Kurt Cobain
Montage
documentary.
Montage of Heck.
Of Heck. Loved it.
This is...
Loved it.
It is tied with Ex Machina as my favorite movie of the festival.
Wow.
So, what's really special about this particular documentary is it's all primary sources. It really is a montage of home movies. They took his diaries and kind of animated some of his drawings.
They took audio recordings audio he had recordings. Just made incessantly, apparently.
Well, and that's what was so amazing to me is that we're talking about going back to, like, the late 60s, early 70s. Like, his family was into home movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, if we tried to tell the Ashley Moreno story, it would basically start on, like, Twitter and be like, oh, so she got a cat named Tigertron, and that's basically where her life began and ended.
Yeah, there'd be a bunch of
short
super
book.
There'd be a bunch of super hit with me in the background while the other brothers and sisters were doing something in the front. And be like, oh, there he is!
Yeah,
where,
like, masks appear on their heads.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I really like that aspect of it. What I also really liked about it is that it touched on something that is a pet peeve of mine, one of my slightly unpopular beliefs. I have a few.
Crazy.
That's true, because I have very strong opinions about the whole Kurt Courtney thing. So.
Okay, yeah, that's probably related to that. Okay. So it actually annoys the shit out of me to hear people talk about, like, to blame Courtney, just like it annoys me to hear people blaming, like, Yoko.
Yeah.
And one thing I took from this documentary is that we might not have even really gotten In Utero if they hadn't had their relationship. He was kind of going off the rails.
He was.
And there's all these home movies where he kind of turned it around for a little bit and really cheered up. And I think it's so easy to kind of, and historically easy, like, go back to, like, Marie Antoinette shit, to, like, blame the girl who happens to be married to the dude.
I
really thought it handled it well.
I appreciate where you're coming from. I do. Help my girlfriend, Courtney, likes to remind me all the time, shut the fuck up about Courtney Love and your hate for her. Like, you know, I'm like, I'm sorry, I just can't stand
and
Courtney
yet
Love.
You're dating a girl
named Courtney.
Courtney.
Well, that was one of the reasons I suspect she likes Courtney Love in the first place. But
and yet you're always waking up strung out lipstick.
I'm not going to espouse the opinions brought out by the Kurt and Courtney documentary, which theorized that she actually had him killed.
Oh, Jesus.
That's pretty preposterous.
Yeah.
But this movie could not have happened without Courtney Love, because it's all this very personal stuff from her own personal collection.
Yeah, and probably his parents.
And his parents as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's if the only negative thing I can say at all, there's a very awkward moment towards the end where Courtney on camera says, no, I never cheated on Kurt. I never cheated on him. It's like, dude, hundreds of people reported you making out with other people. Like, there's so many people who said, like, oh my God, she was sleeping with the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins for, like, months.
Okay, well, Gordon, and to be fair, that's a mistake for a different reason.
Yeah.
On so many levels.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm gonna fuck a rock star, it's not gonna be Billy Corgan. I can promise you that.
Although Evan Dando, I can see. But,
obviously.
Yeah. But the thing about this movie, though, is that even though it's got all this stuff and it sounds dry on the outside, it's masterfully directed.
It is, and I loved the way that they really worked in the music to it, and the way that Insidious was, like, just super loud.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't like that of the first Insidious movie. I was kind of like, hey, guys, your volume's mixed wrong. It totally worked in this.
You know what? I said that to James Wan. I messaged him, like, on Twitter, and he was like, you were sitting in the wrong place. I'm like, dude, I was in the middle of the theater. Come on.
You're like,
come on.
In front of the screen?
But it's
that
funny.
Was the wrong place?
It's funny, because that's actually how I started getting to know him and talking to him on social media, and that was so cool when Furious 7 came out, and I was like, really proud of this dude, and he tweeted back, he's like, yay, thank you, and I was like, your sound mix on the car Vroom Vroom movie was much better.
But in this it worked so well, because it really, I mean, it really felt like a fucking rock and roll documentary. Like, it was so good.
It was a very punk movie.
Yeah.
No question. And I love the way it would go from the studio version of something to the live version of something so seamlessly, or covers of the songs.
Or him still writing it. They had these wonderful recordings of him working out lyrics and just super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
And every time they just had audio recordings, there's this beautiful animation.
Yeah.
Just beautiful animation to go with it. Like, we don't know what was actually happening, but we're, like, doing this really very hyper-realistic animation of Kurt, like, as a young man doing his thing. And there's some, like, honest admittances in this that are awkward and squirm-worthy from Kurt directly on tape about stuff in his early life.
Yeah,
you're like,
wow, ballsy.
But that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, he's like 16. You're like in a logging town. fog.
And, yeah, just the honesty of it I really loved. And, yeah, the animation, it was like something out of like a early Linklater film or something. It was just, it was really beautiful. Like, I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. All right, so what's next?
Raiders.
Raiders.
We're going to talk about Raiders.
Raiders.
And then documentary. But you know what? Before we get to Raiders, Ashley, is there anything else that you have not gotten a chance to talk about that you've seen that you want to talk about?
Let me think. We did Bone and Throat, right?
No.
No.
Did we talk about Bone and Throat?
No, we didn't.
Oh, so Bone and Throat.
The Anthony Bourdain movie is all I know.
It is. It is. And also probably responsible for the most, when it does get wide release, it's going to be responsible for the most disappointed 15-year-old boys since Naked Lunch got released.
Because that's not the kind of bone that's in the throat?
No, no.
That's too bad.
Yeah, yeah. It's a, did either of you see it?
No.
And so we don't have to dwell on
it. No, I love Kitchen Confidential, the original book.
Oh, okay.
And I love British gangsters, so, you know. I thought maybe.
Is that a thing?
Well, I think he has multiple mystery novels. This one, actually, the title of the book is Bone and Throat, from his 1995 mystery novel. Mm-hmm. So he has more than one. But yeah, if you like classic gangster gangster mobster movies, this just is replaced from where it was, I think, in Little Italy. Here in the U.S. into London.
Okay.
They got a bunch of, like, English lesbians.
So it'd be the East End.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a bunch of food porn.
Oh, East End food porn, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm hungry.
So it'll get wide release. Totally worth seeing. I dug that a lot. And then otherwise, I think we talked about a lot of them.
Yeah, we did. And actually, guys, if you're a subscriber, go on, into the subscriber forums. We have a recording where Ashley and I kind of did a wrap-up a few days ago. So go and go forth and find that. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Okay, what else we got?
Raiders!
Raiders!
Oh my gosh, so this documentary called Raiders. Now, if you guys aren't familiar with this, there are two guys who, for the last 20-some-odd years, have been doing a shot-for-shot Swede remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark. They saw it when they were kids. It absolutely blew them away. They decided to put everything they had into making a shot-for-shot reenactment, a tribute film, to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And
it's funny because they've been doing this their whole lives, so if you watch the movie itself, you know, you can actually watch them grow up in the course of filming this movie. And the thing is, there was one scene they always, they never got a chance to finish, and that was, of course, the plane sequence with the fight with the big, bald German.
Yeah,
you know,
because it was just too expensive.
It was one of the most effects-heavy shots in Raiders. And, in fact, one of the things I like about this documentary is they do a lot of parallels between the struggles these two kids had to make this movie and the struggles Steven Spielberg had to make the original film. And what this movie's really about is an all-consuming, all-encompassing love of cinema. And the kind of love that makes you maybe do crazy things like pull up stake and move to Austin, Texas because of a movie theater.
Yeah, I don't believe that ever happened to anybody.
Yeah, no one standing here did that. So like, I think I really appreciate it. And the documentary is really about them coming together again as adults and talking not only about making the movie and what it's meant to them, because this movie kind of became a cult phenomenon, this movie that they were making.
Yeah.
You know, it got screened at Butnamathon, Eli Roth, like during the tape trading days, and, you know, it got passed around a lot. It was a big deal. And so they kind of became local celebrities in their own right. And this is about them coming together again as adults and doing everything they possibly can to finish that last scene. And it's this weird sort of, it's almost like the myth of Sisyphus after a while. It's like they keep pushing the boulder up the hill and then something goes wrong. But their determination to finish this thing that they started as kids is so endearing. And it's like, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, they're being a little irresponsible, sure. But it's like you can't help but admire and love the fact that they're that passionate about their favorite movie that they want to finish this thing they started together as kids.
I mean, even in their 40s, which the film like flashes back and forth from the early footage and early things behind-the-scenes stuff, which, of course, there's only so much behind-the-scenes stuff. Nobody thought, hey, years later, we're going to be making a movie about the making of
this. Yeah, they never knew that.
But, you know, going to them as adults, where they're like, all kind of like, are we really doing this?
Yeah.
And a lot of them, they haven't really seen each other for a while either. And maybe there's even, the movie doesn't really explore so much, but feels like maybe there's still some hurt feelings between some of the guys.
They go into some strained relationships. They go into some of the personal turmoils that have kind of kept people away for a while. I thought the guy playing Indiana Jones had a really dark and compelling story.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course they interview... Funny enough, the one person from Raiders of the Lost Ark that they actually interview is John Rhys-Davies.
Yeah.
And he has these, like, really eloquent, beautiful, you know, just maxims to drop about how that's what being an artist is taking risks and doing things that no one thinks you can accomplish. And it's just, like, this beautiful tribute from a guy that's like, where did you even get him to talk about this?
Yeah, the dude looks like he's suffering from the last stages of severe alcoholism in the interviews, too.
Yeah.
He chose poorly.
He chose poorly. bully. He's had a few bad dates.
I don't know if that's true, but he looks like it.
Actually, when they started talking...
He looks like W.C. Fields at the end of his life.
Oh, yeah. But it was funny when they...
Paul Giamatti?
God damn it. When they started talking about the girl troubles they were having between the two of them and the kind of the love triangles, I just kept thinking, so this movie actually got delayed because of bad dates? Are you serious? Come on. Why did anyone make that joke?
You know, if anything, like, I agree with everything you're saying, but I did feel a certain amount of depression watching this because it was like a lot of this is like failed dreams. There's an undercurrent of like these guys who thought they were going to go and be real film makers and yada yada, like this is they're going to follow their dreams, and nobody did that. Then nothing like that happened, and it's like this whole thing feels like a final like coda on that failed dream.
See, I completely disagree because I feel like the one dream of the whole movie was finishing this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the one guy who's the director has moved on. He's working for a prominent video game company. He's working in a field that he's passionate about outside of this movie. Like, I feel like this is the one thing that they just wanted to finish so that, you know, their favorite childhood movie had even more meaning for them. So, frankly, I feel like the one dream of the movie is finishing the movie. And I feel like the fact that we get to watch them, you know, I won't give too much away, but we get to watch them work through that last scene together is so inspiring. And part of it, I will say, part of it's a personal bias, because when I was a kid, I made tribute movies. I made my own James Bond movie when I was, like, 14.
Subscriber material.
It's
that's
fucking
all
terrible. It's like, maybe at the $25 level. That's how shitty it is. But it's like, and also...
Diamond L's are forever.
Yeah.
Actually, I was like, ooh, that's high-quality content.
Yeah.
$25 level.
Yeah, that's how much I need you to pay before I subject myself to that humiliation. But no, and then also, the Indiana Jones trilogy was always, in my, you know, my for both my brother and I, was the easiest access point to my dad, and just like any time there was conflict between any of us, between me and my dad, me and my brother, my brother and my dad, we'd watch Raiders of the Lost Ark or Last Crusade, and it was so meaningful. So like watching these guys who have kind of that same connection, the same powerful emotional connection to the movie, and guys who, you know, like me as a kid, would make these ridiculous tribute films, although theirs make my shit look even worse, because they're actually, like, setting each other on fire as children. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of, like, irresponsible, like...
Oh, yeah.
But you know what?
I mean, I was just as irresponsible when I was a kid. We just didn't set it on film, and that's my regret.
And that's the thing. It's like, we have nothing to show for it. Like, at our most irresponsible moments as children, we have nothing to show for it. These guys have a document of their entire upbringing, of their entire adolescence through the course of making this movie. And I think that's what to me, this was my boyhood. I like this so much more than Boyhood, because I got to watch people grow up through Raiders of the Lost Ark.
If anything, I was a little annoyed that so much time is spent on Harry Knowles, who, you know,
oh, fuck yeah, that's
whatever
ridiculous.
About Harry, you know, however you feel about him, but he had nothing to do
with
this.
He was such a small part of this film's story. Eli Roth brought this film to Harry's event.
And
that's all Harry
and
was involved
Harry's
with.
Just
it.
In this, like, to be, like, advertised, hey, look, like, what Harry Knowles believes.
Hey, look,
in.
I'm still relevant.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just like, okay, you know, I mean, that's fine, but I'm not sure you should have been anything more than a footnote in this film, and you
that's
felt
true.
Very dominating in it.
That's
and
true.
Then the review got bitter.
This is nothing specifically against Harry. I'm just like, not really sure you should have been in this.
But it's like in terms of any documentary, if you're telling the story of a specific event and somebody was like so tertiarily involved that they're like, yeah, I kind of saw it happen maybe. Why would you talk to that person for 20 minutes?
Yeah, I agree. And that's where I came out.
It's just bad editing.
It felt like just like, oh, well, we got Harry Knowles. And yeah, the surprising thing is they've shown it to Spielberg and Lucas, who supposedly loved it, and they're not in it.
No, there's a great picture of the three of them. They finally do get invited to the studio to show it to Spielberg, and it's a beautiful moment. And again, that's why I think there is a lot of dream realization in this movie, just like that moment in particular. But yeah, I think
it was more touching than Fanboys.
Yeah, it absolutely was. I think this is a beautiful movie. I think it's a documentary that works on a lot of levels, whether you are a big fan of Indiana Jones or whether you just grew up, you know, really loving something as much as these guys did.
Well, it's funny, like, one of the films I saw was the Damned film here, which, Don't You Wish We Were Dead.
Oh, good, because people have been clamoring for, literally. I have so many comments. You're going to review The Damned? You're going to review The Damned?
Really?
So, Chris, review The Damned Damned.
The Damned were a very influential band on me growing up. I mean, here was a band that when I discovered them with just goth, they had an album called Phantasmagoria, where they're all, like, singing pretty about, like, you know, Interview with the Vampire type stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'm reading Interview with the Vampire.
And
that's
sweatshirts
cool.
with thumb holes.
Yeah, no, I mean, the dude was totally wearing, like, long hair, white stripe down the middle, like, a pirate shirt.
I'm kind of picturing Pepe Le Pew right now.
Right? Okay. Kind of was. Okay. Kind of was. Okay. But in their start, they were the most important punk band in the world. They are literally the first punk band ever to record vinyl. They were the first band to put out a record, punk band to put out a record ever. For the Sex Pistols, the Ramones, anybody. And the movie is kind of about how, like, all these other bands, like The Clash and what have you, all got major label contracts and all moved on to, like, being, like, actually pretty goddamn essential, like, stuff. Like, even if you don't really like punk, you know a few songs by these bands.
Sure.
The Damned always just never really
was able
to push
past. Who let that truck into our studio?
Seriously. Get out of here, truck.
Despite the fact that they were, like, they have some of the most incredible music of anybody in the punk era because... They knew how to play their instruments.
Shut the fuck up.
I know, right? They actually started knowing how to play their instruments.
I think there's a great... We need to pitch this to the guys over at Somebody Likes It, doing a comparison piece between The Damned and Death. Because, yeah, you know, you talk about the first punk bands, and after that documentary, I'm always going to believe it was Death. And they were just never, you know, discovered until many years later. I think it would be interesting to juxtapose those two albums.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
But, they're all really interesting characters, and a lot of them can't stand each other. Like, half the band hasn't talked to the other half.
I don't know
any of
what that's like at all.
Half the band hasn't talked to the other half of the band since 1991. And they tour separately as The Damned.
They tour separately?
Yeah.
Did they get into an argument over Benny and June?
No, they just did.
What happened?
There's actually, that's funny you say that. There's a picture at one point of the lead singer, Dave Vanian, from the Phantasmagoria days, right next to Johnny Depp in Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, I think they may have gotten that. Johnny Depp may have gotten his thing from The Damned, from Dave Vanian.
So it may have been Benny and June. It may have been like, no, he's not ripping off Charlie Chaplin. Yes, he is. We're never speaking again.
But, you know, I mean, they had such a, like,
it's like kind of doing a sleepover.
Yes,
exactly.
It wasn't Brooklyn's fault, right? I love the Proclaimers. Fuck your Proclaimers.
It's ironic that they're called The Damned, and they really were kind of damned. Everything went wrong all the time for them.
A punk band?
Shit fell apart all the time for them. Deals that were supposed to happen didn't go through. Friendships fell apart. It was like
cats and dogs living together. Mass hysteria.
But at the same time, it's like a really honest, loving portrait of, like, these guys, especially Captain Sensible, who is the nickname of their guitarist, who is one of the best guitarists in rock and roll.
I am picturing the wrong band at this point.
By your sensible powers combined.
He wears like a like neon colored, like, fuzzy animal suits and all.
And he's
shows.
Captain Sensible.
Captain Sensible. It's ironic.
It's safe when he bikes at night.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. There
exactly.
You go. There you go.
But he really
side.
Is one of the greatest guitarists working today. He's so amazing. And he's a total card. This guy's the funniest guy. Every time he's on camera, the screen just lights up because he's so fucking funny. Dave Vanian, the lead singer, is like, yeah, I was in The Damned. I gotta go. Doesn't say much. And there's even like a,
I gotta watch Ed Wood for the 40s.
There's even a coda at the end. They're like, honestly, we've been working with this guy for 40 years and we don't know anything about him. We don't know anything about this guy. Literally, if you ask me, what's Dave Vanian like? I'm like, I have no idea.
That's interesting. I mean, to be in a band with somebody and know nothing about them.
Yeah, it's just, he's very quiet. And yet, when he is on camera, he seems affable enough. He's not an asshole. He's just like, hey, what's going on? Okay, now I'm going to go back to my other life and never tell you anything
if
about
I, if
it.
If I join a band, I want it to be called The Affable Assholes.
That's a good name for a band.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, I think it was a good documentary. At the worst, it's a little disorganized in the sense that there were a lot of fill-in musicians who were like, oh, this guy was a guitarist for 3 years. This guy was a bassist for 3 years. I have no idea what the order was at the end of this movie. I was like, I don't know who was in The Damned when. I only know the primary guys. So it's a little confusing at points, but ultimately, for fans of this band in the early punk scene, this is a very illuminating picture of what was happening at that time, and a band that drastically changed what they were doing over the decades.
Fantastic. Well, before we sign off for the last time from South by Southwest with this infestation, I want to know from you guys, if you had to give the overall South by Southwest Film Fest a grade on a scale of 10, what would it be? Ashley, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, starting with me?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. I have to say, of, you know, the dozen or so films I saw, the only one that I didn't like to love was probably, oh, and I'm sorry, but The Visit. It was okay. It was a documentary about what it would be like if an alien came to visit. It was
okay.
Was it hosted by Dan Aykroyd, by any chance?
It was directed by somebody with the name Michael Madsen that I don't think was Michael Madsen.
No, I don't think it was either.
As insane as that concept is, it could have been the actual Michael Madsen.
Yeah, I mean, it had some really beautiful photography, but I was maybe just a little sleepy, got a little bit bored. But, I mean, other than that, I really liked to love every film I saw. I really thought that they were fantastic. So if I had to give it a score, I don't know. I think I'd give it an 8 or a 9.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I'd say I only saw one film I didn't really like this year, which was called The Diabolical, which was a mess.
We disliked it so much we decided not even to review
it. We're not even going to review it. I don't even want to say it. It's already picked up for distribution.
Of course it is. Fuck.
Oh, my God. Is it such a mess? And I like Ali Larder a lot, who stars in it, but...
I agree. Yeah. Best not to lay into festival films.
Although, once it gets distribution, if we see it in theaters,
it's distribution. Hold it back.
I am the greatest at ripping movies apart. I am the greatest.
If they offer to send us, if they offer,
it's Christopher Walken.
I'm the greatest at ripping them a new one.
Now do it, Christoph Waltz.
Thank you very much for having me. The thing is, this movie is terrible. No one should see it.
You guys, I'm just so sorry. It's been a long week. We're clearly a little drunk.
Yes, we've had too many beers at this particular venue.
Oh, my God. There's someone's walking up, too. They're going to hear.
We're going to be arrested. Yeah, no, I'm with you, Ashley. Like, I saw so few movies that I disliked, and so many that I liked. And not only that, but the whole system.
They were fucking amazing. The movies were great. Yeah. So good. Moonwalkers, loved it.
Moonwalkers, so good.
Yeah, and even the line systems were really easy to maneuver.
Really well done this year.
Yeah, I got to say, overall.
And the parties and all the free booze.
Parties were great. We drank a lot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All I can say is right now, I may not have cable, but I will always be grateful to Animal Planet.
Indeed. Animal Planet, not an official sponsor, but may as well have been.
2 years in a row.
The bottle we cashed of Maker's Mark at their party.
Oh, my God.
I would give this a solid 9. I think what Jared Nice and Janet Pearson are doing with this festival is absolutely amazing, and I commend them, especially for the size of this thing and how well they ran it. Kudos.
It does nothing but improve. I'd give it a 9, too. I think that this is a festival that is getting the kinks out, and with the sheer size of it, man. Yeah.
And despite how much longer music has been a thing at South By, they can't even touch the logistics of the film festival. The film festival kicks their ass up and down when it comes to logistics.
Which doesn't even start and stop with the fact that I don't think any nerds got beat up by the musicians this year.
That's
weird.
I don't
think there was one wedgie given.
All right,
one noogie.
Let's go out and fix that right now.
Yeah. Noogies away.
Noogies away. Thanks for listening to our coverage, guys. Thanks for being part of the infestation. Ashley, thank you for joining us in this review.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And please click that Audible link, and I guess we're just going to sign off and finally collapse for a while.
Wait, more whiskey first.
More whiskey first.
Yeah. And karaoke apocalypse.
Yes, that too.